welcome everyone to tonight's training. And this training is a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provide CCL supporters with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics related to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, and tonight's topic specifically is carbon dividend distribution. And to get us there, we're going to be joined by our speaker tonight, the wonderful Rick Knight, CCL's research coordinator. Rick's mission as research coordinator is to work with Vice President of Legislation and Research, Danny Richter, and independent experts to strengthen our science, technology, and policy fundamentals. Rick's portfolio includes updating and maintaining our laser talks, our white papers, and our analytical projects that help our volunteers perform at their very best. And prior to joining the CCL team, Rick completed a 40-year career in energy and pollution control research at the Gas Technology Institute, retiring in 2016 as an institute engineer. Rick's been also instrumental in a lot of the leadership throughout Chicago and the larger Illinois area for CCL. And thank you so much for joining us tonight for this webinar. If we've done our job well, all of us will be walking away with three learning goals after tonight's training. We'll have the chance to review the basic steps behind how the dividend is delivered to American households. We'll have the chance to also gain deeper insight into the key questions that many of us have about that distribution process. And we'll be able to start comparing what our study's done, that Rick is going to highlight in just a little bit, with what the actual provisions spell out in House Resolution 763, better known as the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. To get us there, our agenda is fairly straightforward. Rick's going to start with a little review and talk about the policy background. We're then going to talk about the dividend delivery study and updates that were made in the 2018 version, and then do an analysis that compares that with the new current proposed legislation, after which we'll jump into Q&A. But without further ado, the floor is yours, Rick.
Well, thank you very much, Brett, and thanks everybody for coming to listen to this talk tonight. So first of all, you may have already heard that the Carbon Fee and Dividend and now the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act as being supported by a three-legged stool. And these legs are the carbon fee, the carbon dividend, and the border adjustment. Each of these legs have to be strong enough to hold up its end. And we're going to take a closer look at this one. So let's start by reviewing the basic structure of the policy. A carbon fee, actually it's a carbon dioxide fee, but it's collected before the carbon actually gets burned, is imposed on the big three fossil fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas. The fee goes up every year pretty aggressively and goes into a carbon fund, carbon trust fund. So what happens to all that money? It gets divvied up to American households. Now, some people refer to this as revenue recycling because the money originally came from households because of all the energy that's used. It was either purchased by them or purchased by businesses that sell stuff to them. So this is just like recycling the money back where it came from. But why give it back to them instead of, say, buying a bazillion solar panels? The reason is because this is the simplest way to pump money back into the economy at the level where it gets spent, at the consumer level. Household energy spending is disproportionately high at high incomes. So shoveling the money back to taxpayers equally per capita tends to help low-income Americans without any complicated, costly targeting or means testing. And because of its universality, the carbon fee covers every kind of energy, provides an incentive for conservation and innovation to cut greenhouse gas emissions from both consumers and businesses that serve them. Because it's right out in the open, it's transparent about where the money is going, ensuring public visibility. And because they're getting money in their pockets every month, people will like it. So here are the main points of the distribution framework based on the eligibility for a dividend. Every adult, 19 and up, gets a full share. Every child, counted as a dependent minor by the IRS, gets a half share. And who qualifies to be in this recipient pool? Any U.S. resident with a Social Security number or an individual taxpayer ID number, ITIN, Those are numbers granted to workers who pay taxes but are not eligible for a Social Security number. We calculate that the combination of adult and child dividends will be equivalent to about 284 million adult dividend shares in the first year, and they'll go up gradually as the population grows. So what about this thing called the Carbon Trust Fund? It's like a piggy bank, a destination for all the carbon fees collected from coal, oil, and gas producers. It will be a standalone account, kind of like a sweep account that doesn't accumulate money except that which will be distributed to the households. It cannot be rated for general revenue by future Congresses. It doesn't require government to pick winners or losers. The locations of those new wind farms or transmission lines or biorefineries will be decided not by which congressman controls the funding for some agency or department, but by the engineering and economic criteria that helps guide those decisions. Now, let me give you an idea about how the fund grows and what goes back to the people. There's all this money coming in. Then there are some administrative costs, and the remaining money gets sent out as dividends. And I'll get into those exciting administrative overhead costs a little later. But right now, let's see the numbers. In year one, with the $15 per metric ton fee, we estimate collecting about $78 billion. Out of that, that overhead will be about $5 billion. Leaving $73 billion for households, a little over 93%. How about year two? With a $25 carbon fee, about $139 billion goes into the fund. Administrative costs is still only about $5 billion, so that leaves $134 billion for households, which is over 96% of the gross. And jump ahead to year five, the carbon fee is $55 a metric ton plus inflation. And here's how the numbers look. According to the emissions reduction predicted by REMI, the fund would collect $291 billion gross. Administrative costs is still about $5 billion. And the net that goes out to households is $286 billion, which is over 98%. So you get the idea. As the years go by, the amount of the collected fees that goes back to taxpayers ends up at about 99%. Which I think is pretty impressive. Try to find any service company with an overhead of only 1%. So let's move on to distributing the dividend, getting this money to more than 300 million Americans. Who's ever heard someone say, "It sounds complicated. It will be too expensive to send out all those checks." Or, "Government will never give the money back." Things like that. Right? You've heard that. Well, we wanted to know, so that's why we hired a fellow named Alan Lerman. So who's Alan Lerman? He's a retired economist from the U.S. Treasury's Department's Office of Tax Analysis, who worked on every major tax legislation and administrative reform from 1971 until he retired in 2014. In fact, this guy was the one who designed the 1040EZ short form for income taxes, as some of you might be familiar with. So why did CCL hire him instead of using our own genius brains to figure it all out? Well, because CCL is not a think tank. We depend on outside experts to give us guidance and credibility on complex questions of policy and law. Alan Lerman is exceptionally qualified to play this role for carbon dividend distribution. So let me tell you about the work that he's done. We contracted with Mr. Lerman in 2015 to develop the details of dividend distribution and help us identify any weaknesses, as well as make recommendations about how it could best be carried out. In March of 2016, he issued his 54-page report, paying dividends to United States residents with the revenue from carbon fee. But then based on our further discussions with him and with the drafting of a real bill in the works, we asked for an update, which he delivered in May of 2018. Now, some of you may have attended a previous CCU on this topic. I think it was a year ago. or maybe attended our Saturday seminar just before last year's conference in Washington on that Saturday before a lobby day, and got to hear Alan give his own presentation on this. But let me start here by summarizing 12 main findings from the first report. First, how to distribute the dividends. Lerman considered two methods. Not moving. There it is. Okay. Paying dividends directly to a household or through an employer by adding the dividend to a worker's paycheck. And his conclusion was that a direct payment system works best. It's simpler and more flexible, with fewer headaches for government and businesses. Second, who should the public connect with under the program? It could be the IRS or a Social Security Administration or a new agency or contractors reporting to Treasury, like the way Medicare is handled. For a variety of reasons, he recommended that private contractors under Treasury would work best. The third item, who actually gets the money in the household? Does it go to each individual? Is a two-year-old kid going to get a check? That's not very practical. The most practical way is for the primary tax filer to get the money for him or herself and his or her dependents. And for a married couple, it will be a joint payment. For people who don't file taxes, there would be a special form to apply for dividends. And that form is detailed in Lerman's report, and I'll talk about it a little bit later. So fourth, how is the money paid to recipients? In what form? In the vast majority of cases, this would be an electronic funds transfer, or EFT, right into a bank account, just like you get your tax refund. And 92% of Americans have a bank account, and most of those who don't have some form of federal debit card to which the dividend can be added. And the final backup is a paper check. And this 8% here means the total of these. Actually, the majority of those would be the debit card holders. Now, fifth, Mr. Lerman examined the implications of counting dividends as taxable income. The CCL had already baked this into the carbon fee and dividend proposal. But Lerman wanted to do some deeper analysis, which agreed that this is a more progressive way to address what's called the haircut required by the pay-as-you-go law. Now, this is getting really deep in the weeds, but there's a law called pay-as-you-go that says that the federal budget cannot be increased by a new law. The revenue cannot be decreased, I should say. You cannot increase the deficit with a new law. So there would be either 25% taken off the top before distributing dividends as a compensation for lost tax revenue, or you could do it this way. And we can dig deeper into PAYGO during the Q&A if anyone wants to. But let's move on to number six, tax withholding for dividend income. If the dividend is to be taxable, then a portion should be withheld, just like it is for regular income, to avoid people being hit with a bigger than expected tax bill on April 15th, which just a couple days ago. And Lerman's solution was to submit an annual form with your tax return, indicating the percent to be withheld in the following year, which could be zero if that's what you want. But you can see that form in the report. Seventh, the impact of taxability on social programs such as SNAP or Medicaid or other programs that are means tested. That is, based on the amount of your income, Lerman detailed how the dividend, if counted as income for means testing, could actually bump someone up out of their eligibility for that program, possibly wiping out any gains they get from the dividend. So the simple solution, which CCL has adopted, was that the dividend should not count as income for means testing. You'd have to pay taxes on it, but it would not count as income for those purposes. Number eight, the report discussed the administrative costs of the program. I mentioned this earlier, and you saw it in the chart of the cash flow. And it's that question sometimes asked, won't handing out all this money be expensive? And Lerman did not try to make a rigorous estimate of the cost that was beyond his scope, but he showed that whatever it is, it would shrink as a percentage of revenue each year. It's because while the revenue pool would go up rapidly as the fee increases, the number of dividends paid out would barely increase at all. And so the cost of administering it would be relatively constant. In a couple slides, I'll dig a little deeper into how we estimated that amount. Number 9, the report considered how to handle household changes and corrections like births, deaths, marriages, divorces, kids coming of age or moving out, and so on. Whenever such a change occurs, a dividend recipient would need to communicate that change to the agency handling the dividend payments by filing a change form, probably online, to certify the change. And changes that don't get filed in the month they occur would then have to be entered on a form, a reconciliation form, at tax time. 10th, what about self-supporting minors? It means people who are younger than 19, but are not claimed as a dependent by anyone else because they live on their own. Per this report, they should be eligible for adult dividends. Number 11, now we're getting into the really tricky cases, like residents who are incarcerated. People in prison don't pay their own living expenses, so should they receive a dividend or should it go to the institution? Lerman did not make a recommendation, but just identified the complications around this issue so that policymakers could get a head start on resolving it. And similarly, the 12th item, what about Americans living outside the 50 states, like in Puerto Rico or Guam, or also American citizens living in other countries because they may have a job there? Now, once again, Lerman did not try to make policy, but identified the complications. Now, for instance, some U.S. territories don't participate in the IRS tax system and all that record keeping, so it would be very challenging to get dividends to individual households. Now, on the flip side, should an American, say with a job in Germany, living and working in Germany, be eligible for a carbon dividend based on fossil fuels burned in the U.S.? The report explores these questions, so that gives you a flavor of the kind of tough things that Aaron Lerman explored in relation to a carbon fee and dividend plan. And here's a summary of the workflow that he designed. That is, the forms to be filled out, data to be transferred, and so on, so that things go smoothly, and most importantly, people get their money. It starts with tax filers sending their normal return at tax time, but also including a form with it. He called it a CD4, but could be called something else, to specify how much should be withheld from their dividends for the coming year. Non-filers would have to send a similar form to a contractor, who then would pull that data out, give it to the IRS to merge with their database. The IRS then sends all that info to another contractor, who then compiles that data together with the carbon fund data to calculate the dividend payment for each recipient. That information goes to a pay agent in the Treasury, who then sends people their money. So far, so good. Now, in the course of the year, as I said, it's likely there are changes in a household which affects the money they're eligible to receive. So depending on how the regulations are written, the necessary reconciliations may be made monthly, but in any case, they would have to be at least done annually so that it will be processed through their tax return. So there will be a form that recipients need to fill out to take care of these adjustments. Another contractor, and keep in mind that these could all be the same contractor. That one processes that information to get those changes into the database and authorize the pay agent to send out refunds or receive balance due payments as needed. So that's the process, enough to warm the heart of every accountant. So now, before you think the excitement is coming to an end, I want to dig deeper into the question of administrative cost. As I said, a detailed estimate was beyond the scope of Lerman's contract, to estimate what those costs are going to be over the years, but he suggested a reasonable basis for estimation was the IRS and Social Security operating budgets, which were both around $12 billion in 2016. Now, he assumed $6 billion, or half as much as those agencies for the carbon fund. But we thought it was important to do a little more detailed estimate, since we knew skeptics would raise the issue. So we looked at the details in the IRS and Social Security budgets to see what kind of things they did and how they would compare with what the carbon trust fund would need to handle. It became clear that that the IRS was a better template because of the way their budget was broken down into activities like taxpayer assistance, filing services, investigations, and so on. There were nine categories. And so we compared them by assigning a complexity factor to each one. That means, how do the carbon fund responsibilities compare with what the IRS has to deal with? You know, for example, the IRS has to process about 180 million tax returns every year, every one of which is unique. The Carbon Trust Fund, on the other hand, they have to send out about 200 and some million dividends, but they're all the same. There are only two kinds, either an adult or a child dividend. So that makes it much less complicated. So we totaled that all up for all these different activities and also estimated startup costs like office space, computer systems, hiring staff. And we used some online data about how private businesses investing in startups are, and based on their number of employees, how much they spend. So we figured a startup cost of about $11 billion and then borrowed that against the future carbon fee revenue over 15 years. Sorry, I muted myself. That gives you a bottom line of about $5 billion a year at the start. It goes up a little and then comes back down after the startup costs are paid, so it ends up right about at the same amount. And just to show you what a small fraction of this is, people will say $5 billion is a lot of money. And once again, I'm not advancing. There it is. Here's how the amount that goes to dividends in green compares with the amount that goes to pay for those administrative costs in orange over those 30 years. The dividends grow rapidly, but the overhead cost, that tiny little orange slice, stays essentially the same and ends up at only about 1% of the total. And I know this is way into the weeds, but I thought it was important to drive this point home. So now let's see what Alan Lerman had to say in his 2018 update to the 2016 report. It was mainly an update of the entire report that also included some new material covering things like how the new tax law of 2017 might affect the process. Keep in mind, though, that it was completed before the bill was introduced. So if you read the report, you'll see that there's a lot of mention of a two-child dividend limit per family. I'll talk about some of that more shortly. But one of the things Lerman did was to analyze what he called simplification options, simplified in the sense that they would make administration simpler and possibly less expensive. These are pretty technical suggestions, but I'll summarize them as best I can. First is to lift the restriction on the number of children that can receive a dividend in a household. It was two per family in the original proposal and when he wrote this report. And Lerman calculated that removing it would reduce the size of an individual dividend by about 2.4% because the money would be divided among more people. And larger families would gain a lot, but at the expense of just 2% lower for smaller households. Second, he looked at what would happen if children and adults were given the same dividend amount. That would reduce the size of an adult dividend by almost 12%. And with this, all families with children would end up with more, but at the expense of households with no children, to the tune of about 12%. although it would make administration easier. Now, third, setting the amount of dividend for a whole year rather than updating it monthly based on emissions estimate for the year. In this case, there would not need to be a monthly recalculation of the size of a dividend, but there would have to be an adjustment made at the end of the year to account for the actual carbon fees collected versus the estimate. Fourth, updating eligibility on an annual rather than monthly basis, again, to save administrative costs. This means that a household has a change like a newly born or adopted child, or the death of a family member, or someone moving in or moving out. Those changes would not count until the next year. Of course, this greatly reduces paperwork, which you saw in the workflow, but it would mean, for example, that a baby born in January would not get a child dividend until the following year. On the other side of the coin, if somebody passes away in the household, that dividend would continue to be paid until the end of the year. So it could have either positive or negative consequences, depending on the situation. So that was one possible option. Fifth, making carbon dividends exempt from federal income tax. And this, of course, as I said, was something that was intensely debated in designing the policy. But Lerman wanted to make sure all the ramifications were understood. And if you do want to read the report, there's a lot of detail in there. But it would still run up against that issue with the scoring of the bill by the Congressional Budget Office, which will follow that pay-as-you-go guideline. And so if the dividends were made exempt from federal income tax, it would tend to tilt the benefits toward higher incomes and become less progressive in terms of financial outcomes. Now, so in the next slide, I'll show you how these options relate to the actual text and implementation of the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. I'll show you which of them were adopted in the bill, and which things were not adopted, and which things were actually left up to the regulatory phase that would come after the bill is passed. Now, I want to explain that. It's a feature of all major legislation that a great deal of the shaping of the policy is left up to federal agencies. It's not because Congress is lazy or because they don't want to do these things, they don't want to tackle these things, but if every detail had to be spelled out in legislation, nothing would ever pass. And besides, agencies like the EPA or the Treasury Department, that's where the deep expertise is located, with career civil servants like the guy who wrote the report. So first, the bill did adopt the change that there will be no household limit on child dividends. Every American resident who has a Social Security number or ITIN will be entitled to a dividend, whether the household has two kids or a dozen. The dividend income will not be counted as taxable income for the purpose of means testing, so no one will be bumped out of their program because of the dividend income. And another item I didn't mention, it was recommended in the Lerman report, is that adults who are claimed as dependents, such as elderly or disabled adults, will be eligible for adult dividends in that household, which was not clear in our original proposal. Now, some of the options that were not adopted include the option that children and adults would get full-size dividends. In other words, everybody gets an adult dividend. The bill doesn't do that. Dividends will not be exempt from federal tax. Lerman also suggested that dividends in the early years, because they're relatively small amounts, could be paid less frequently, such as quarterly at the start. But as the bill now stands, that's not the case. And I also talked before about the issues with the territories, like Puerto Rico and Guam and so on. Lerman suggested they could get a lump sum payment based on their population to be dispersed by their governors as they see fit. But the bill doesn't do that. It currently excludes the territories from any participation in the program. They don't receive carbon dividends, but neither are they subject to carbon fees. And in that third category, here are things left up to the regulators, which in the Energy Innovation Act is either the Treasury Department or the EPA, or both of those working together. Now, first of all, family or household dividends can go to the person who files taxes rather than the separate payment being made to each individual, although that's not stipulated in the bill. It can be left up to the regulators to make that change. And this is the process that was envisioned for carbon fee and dividend, and the bill text has the flexibility to allow that. The bill also allows the Treasury to set up private contractors as intermediaries to interact with the public. It's not in the bill, but it's up to the regulators. In addition, Lerman recommended that self-supporting minors, I talked about before, who may be supporting even a family, even though they're under 19, should receive adult dividends, as long as they're not claimed as someone else's dependents. And dividend payment methods are not spelled out in the bill, but would be designed again as part of that rulemaking process. Same thing with tax withholding, the reconciliation of household changes during the year, and the question of how dividends for incarcerated residents would be handled. So Lerman's report goes into some detail on these and for more. And I wanted to make sure that you could understand that just because something is not in the bill, it doesn't mean it can't be done or it would be done differently. This is an important thing to realize when, and certainly when talking to members of Congress or their staffs, or talking to stakeholders in your grass tops outreach or your grassroots presentations or so on. You need to be able to understand these differences. So I'll wrap up this way. Why go so deep in the weeds on this dividend distribution question? Most of this stuff, as I said, isn't even in the legislation that we spent years pushing. The answer is engagement. We want to make sure that CCL stays engaged in the process as the bill moves through Congress, and even after it becomes law, because as you can see, there will be a lot of important policy still to be made. We want CCL to be the go-to organization for expertise on this policy or on any climate policy, even if it's not specifically the Energy Innovation Act or specifically coming from CCL staff. You know from your lobbying that congressional office staff can be overwhelmed with complex issues. And who do we want them to be depending on when their backs are up against the wall on climate policy? So the more we know about this stuff, the more helpful we can be to them. The goodwill we can cultivate with lawmakers and other experts like Alan Lerman, the better our chances will be to get our voices heard. And finally, endurance. We're trying to create the momentum for a massive transformation, not just in our energy systems or just our economy, but throughout our whole society. There's always a place for the charismatic visionaries that inspire action and then move on. But at the end of the day, it's those who persevere who end up writing the rules that matter.
All right. Thank you, Rick, for a wonderful webinar tonight. Here is a quick reminder of where to find our upcoming and recent training. You can always share any of our programs with your social network. We wanted to close by highlighting the Dividend Delivery Study's main findings again, and that is that delivering the dividend to almost every American household is feasible. The direct payment of the dividend to households is simpler, more stable, and less burdensome than paying it indirectly through wages or Social Security benefits. That important details, including the forms to apply for the dividend, specify tax withholdings, and reconcile status changes, are already all fully worked out. That more than 95% of dividends can be paid by direct bank deposits or funds added to government-issued debit cards, helping to keep the administrative costs low, and that impacts of several variations to key policy provisions are analyzed for their pros and cons, helping Congress make the right decision. With that, if you have any questions moving forward on elements of the dividend delivery study that we didn't speak to tonight, we have two recommended places to go to. The first of which is actually our forums on community. You can just simply visit community.com www.citizensclimate.org/forums and post any questions that you might have, and also search for what other people have already been asking in case your question's already been addressed. You're also more than welcome to email CCL's research coordinator, Rick Knight, the star of our show tonight, at rick.knight@citizensclimatelobby.org. Again, thank you all for making it to tonight's webinar. We are so grateful for your work and advocacy out there. We hope that you found this training useful, and we look forward to working together to build the political will for a livable world. Thank you, everyone.